Every champion has a team behind them. And for thousands of families without insurance, Christ Clinic is that team. At Christ Clinic in Katy, Texas, they provide high-quality, faith-based health care to people who can't afford it. Because everyone deserves a shot at health, no matter their income or insurance status. Their doctors, volunteers, their mission, rooted in compassion. Their impact, over 10,000 patient visits every year and growing. But they can't do it without help from fans like you. If you ever cheered for a comeback story, this is your chance to be a part of one. Donate today at ChristClinicKaty.org and help them keep the doors open for those who need it most. One gift can be the difference between surviving and thriving. Christ Clinic in Katy, where health meets hope and faith goes to work. That's Christ Clinic Katy, spelled KATY.org. Team up with them today.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Live Better on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and every week we sit down with people who have dedicated their lives to growth, physically, mentally, spiritually, and who remind us that living better isn't about perfection, it's about progress. Today's show dives into two worlds at first might seem totally different, but really they're connected by the same heartbeat, passion, purpose, and perseverance. Now, it's kind of a little bit different of guests that I'm bringing on than I normally do. I usually bring on holistic practitioners, entrepreneurs, people in those fields. But today, we're starting with running, that simple act of putting one foot in front of the other that somehow teaches you everything about discipline, patience, and self-belief. I think a lot of us can relate to this. You start out motivated, training for something, chasing a goal, and after a while, it starts to feel repetitive. The runs blend together, the sparks fade, and suddenly what used to light you up feels just like another checkoff, a check off your list. That's why I'm excited for today's first guest, Jeff Horowitz. This guy's ran over 200 marathons and ultra marathons across 6 different continents, coached athletes of all levels, and just released a new book called The Running Bucket List, 106 Ideas to Inspire Every Runner. And I love that, 106 ideas, because it's not just a training book. It's a blueprint for reigniting your love for the run. And I'm not a big runner myself. I know I've ran a few times. It's honestly agony to run, in my opinion. But I can relate it to lifting. You know, it can get repetitive. And for someone who's not truly in love with it, looking for different ways to spice it up, it's always a good change as long as it keeps you going and keeps you motivated. Jeff, we're going to talk about how to bring excitement back into the fitness journey, whether that means signing up for the Chicago Marathon, finding a local turkey trot to run with your family, or even flying halfway across the world to a race on a mountain trail in South Africa. His book is packed with ways of making running feel fresh again and to remind yourself why you started in the first place. And honestly, that's the lesson that applies far beyond running. We all fall into routines with work, health, relationships, and sometimes we forget that we have the power to shake things up and find new meaning in what we do every day. Then we're going to switch gears a little bit with my good friend Nick Douglas, author of Where Did Our Game Go? His new book explores what happened to college football, how a game that used to be about pride and tradition and community has evolved into a billion-dollar machine. So let's get into that. Up first, a man who's logged thousands of miles across the world, coached hundreds of athletes, and found a way to make running an adventure again. Right after this on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
My fellow Americans, let the message ring out that from this day forward, when you buy American, you buy the best. Handcrafted, something premium, something pure. For this is the very essence of what our servicemen and women gave their lives to protect, and by God, we shall not allow their sacrifice to be forgotten. It's time to show the world just how great American can be. And we will not wait for tomorrow to come. We will stand here, this moment, together. And we will start today. Don't ever forget how great it is to be American. America we need right now. Celebrate responsibly.
Every champion has a team behind them. And for thousands of families without insurance, Christ Clinic is that team. At Christ Clinic in Katy, Texas, they provide high-quality, faith-based health care to people who can't afford it, because everyone deserves a shot at health, no matter their income or insurance status. Their doctors, volunteers, their mission, rooted in compassion, their impact, over 10,000 patient visits every year and growing. But they can't do it without help from fans like you. If you ever cheered for a comeback story, this is your chance to be a part of one. Donate today at ChristClinicKaty.org and help them keep the doors open for those who need it most. One gift can be the difference between surviving and thriving. Christ Clinic in Katy, where health meets hope and faith goes to work. That's Christ Clinic Katy, spelled KATY.org. Team up with them today.
Do you have a book? Get it out of your mind and make it a real book with a free guide to book publishing. Trying to publish a book yourself can be complicated. It takes a lot of time. Time that you could spend writing your book or even more books. Do what you do best. We can do the rest. Thousands of authors across the nation have trusted our book publishing service. We have the connections to help you get your book printed, distributed, and sold on Amazon, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. We can do it faster than you can on your own. Get your free guide to publishing. It's a free phone call. Remember, make this free call right now and learn how to turn your book into something real that people can buy. Get your free writer's guide. Call right now. 800-482-8399. 800-482-8399. 800-482-8399. That's 800-482-8399.
Welcome back to Live Better on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and man, I'm excited for today's episode. Now, I got an amazing guest joining me, Jeff Horowitz. Hey, he has run over 200 marathons and ultras on six continents. He's a coach, professor, and the author of Running Bucket List, a new guide to reigniting your love for running. So without further ado, Jeff, how are you doing today, man? And I'm excited to have you on.
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Blake.
Of course. So before we jump into it, just tell me a little bit about yourself and, you know, what the audience needs to know about Jeff.
Okay. Well, I didn't start out as a runner. I came down to Washington, D.C. from New York, where I'd grown up, and I was poor as a church mouse, and I couldn't afford a pair of running shoes, but I wanted to get fit and just get some relief from the stress of going to grad school. And I literally started out just going around the block. To the laps around the block, one lap, two lap, and eventually built it up, ran down the street and back, got out a map and figured out other routes, and decided I'm going to enter a race. And that was a marathon, and that was the first race I ever ran. It was a marathon, and I needed something to scare me a little bit that would keep me on the straight and narrow. And years later, this has not only been my passion, but now it's my career. And I'd love to help others, you know, explore this part of them, whether for health or for excitement or for the camaraderie of the sport, but to get out there and enjoy their bodies and the world in this way.
I love that. I guess one thing I want to ask, you have so many different options of how to get fit nowadays. And, you know, honestly, even back then too, I mean, the same options, right? What made you choose running? You have, you know, you could do lifting, you could do, you know, combat sports. Why running? What drew you to that?
You know, it's just in so many ways, it's the very easiest thing. The entry level is so easy. You don't have to belong to any club, though many people do. You don't have to belong to a gym, although a lot of runners like to do that as well. You don't have to have any fancy, you know, clothing equipment, although some runners do. All you need to do is just get out the door. Wherever you are, whatever you've got, you're a runner as long as you get out there and try and run. There's no set level that indicates what you need to do and how you need to be in order to be a runner. If you want to be a baseball player, you have to join a league. If you want to play football, you have to join a team. If you want to, you know, do rowing, any of these other sports, there are different techniques that you need to learn and certifications that you may need to get and memberships you have to subscribe to. But with running, all you have to do is get out and do what you learned to do when you were maybe 2 or 3 years old. So that the ease of entry and the ability to do this anywhere you are in the world is so appealing. And the way you feel about yourself, your body, and the whole world around you, it just makes it such a great experience and available to anyone who wants to try.
So I have, a personal question here. Why or how do you stay committed to running? I ask that because, you know, I've tried to, like, I don't know if you noticed on the internet, but running kind of became very popular over the past year. There's about a bunch of run clubs now. I cannot stick to running for the life of me. I get shin splints. Right. I get out of breath within the first, mile, and I'm a pretty fit guy. You know, I do bodybuilding, but when it comes to running, it's my kryptonite. Was that like an issue for you, or was that just, you're kind of go, go, go?
Oh, sure. I made a lot of mistakes along the way, and I've written a bunch of books trying to help other people not make those same mistakes. With me, it was all try and do it and see what happens. And a lot of times that took me down to some not so great roads. So I did have injuries and all kinds of issues came up. But for many people I see who tell me they don't like running, doesn't work for them, what I discover again and again is that usually they're doing it too fast, too much, too soon. Because really this is something that our bodies should be able to do and that we should enjoy doing. I love evolutionary biology. That's the science of seeing how we've developed to become the kind of creatures, the animals that we are. And running was a big, big part of that. When we came down out of, out of the Ice Age and were able to run across the savannas, as Cro-Magnon man, running helped us catch prey and helped us avoid being prey. And it was a big, big part of who we are and how we developed. And if you're not having fun with it, probably making something that should feel easy and fun being uncomfortable. So if you feel out of breath, go a little bit slower. If you feel like you just feel miserable when you finish, maybe don't go quite that far. Maybe don't get so aggressive with your buildup. It should be fun. If you want to take walk breaks, take walk breaks. I've done that, and there's no rule against it. You're still a runner. But find ways to make it enjoyable. If you stick with it, though, and you don't have to do it every day, but consistently, say, 2-3 times a week, you'll see that automatically you start feeling better and you move better and your breathing gets better and all these magical changes happen in your body. I say magical because you're not even aware of some of the things that your body is doing to resculpt itself to make you into a better runner. So more mitochondria in the muscle cells, more red blood cell density. You have stronger hearts, you have a stronger pump rate, better ability to sweat and get rid of heat. Your body will make all these changes if you just get out there and move. So give it a shot. If you don't like where you are, find a route that you like. Here in D.C., there are so many places to go, so many options. There are bike trails. I could run along the river. I could run through the city. And that is very motivating for me. And you mentioned earlier, so many people have even joined clubs since the pandemic. They want to get out there. If you have trouble getting motivated and you have trouble just getting out there by yourself, well, then don't do it by yourself. Find other people who you can run with, and there are so many options with that. You can find run clubs at the local running stores, or sometimes there are run clubs in the community. If you belong to a gym, you can even post on their message board and find other people who might want to run and make it into a fun social thing. Maybe go out for coffee or breakfast afterwards and make it part of your life that's enjoyable and not a struggle.
I want to jump into the book here, but I got one more question. I know I've talked to a lot of runners, and they have either apps or, some sort of thing that tells them, how to run throughout the week. Do you have any strategies for beginners who are just getting into running? And because I know there's like certain things like, run 2 miles this day, run a mile the next day, now run 5 miles. Like, how does that work? And, how does someone pace themselves out?
It's so interesting because when I started out, I'm a little bit older, so, we didn't have all this stuff, and I would just kind of get out there. You kind of have to know what you respond well to. So there's so many online resources now that you could have, whether it's like the Peloton platform that has all different kind of workouts or different kind of running preset workouts, whether you get, personal coaching, you belong to some kind of coaching program and they send you the workouts. Whether you run with a run club and they have their weekly workouts, there are a lot of ways to get into a program and become part of that and make the most use of that. If you track it on your phone, on your device, on your watch, your smartwatch, you can get the gratification of seeing how you're progressing. And that positive reinforcement really helps. And I teach a running class at our local university here, George Washington University, and I'd love to point out as the semester progresses how much better everyone is getting. They may not even be aware, but, you ran a little bit faster today, or we ran a little bit further today than we ever have before. And realizing how you've improved is so, so reinforcing for what you're doing. And being able to track that in an app really helps. I think, in many cases. But if you're also the kind of person who wants to just get out there and you don't really want to get all caught up in the numbers, you don't want to be stressed about it, you don't want to be competitive in that way, just get out and just have fun. Maybe just go for half an hour, and whatever you do in that half an hour, if you feel like running, run. If you want to take walk breaks, you know, walk. If you want to run fast and you feel you're competitive, then do that. The whole thing is to figure out which ways you respond well to, and then pursue that path of it.
So I got about 2 minutes here before we go into our first break. Your book lists 106 ideas. How do you balance these epic goals with everyday running? Not everybody can go, you know, run around the base of a mountain or whatever. How do you balance that and, you know, keep it interesting still?
You know, it's like so many things in life, right? You have like your daily list of things you got to do, and then you got your big like ticket items. Like, you know, today I might want to just make sure I get all those errands done. You know, if I have time, I want to meet up with a friend of mine and have lunch. But at some point, you know, this year I'd love to go to Italy, you know, or do something really fun and different. And I treat my running the same way. I'll have my daily, my weekly goals, and then like the big ticket items that maybe sometimes it'll take years to plan. I was lucky enough to be able to do a 5-day stage race in the Himalayas, you know, running in the shadow of Mount Everest, and I write about that in the book. But there are a lot of things that you could do to, you know, check off on your list of items that you could do immediately. Things like try and figure out how you can make running into your daily commute. Maybe you could do errands. You have to go to the post office. You know, mine is about half a mile away. I might run over there with, you know, a package or something and drop it off and run back. And just figure out ways to make that part of my regular routine. Maybe check in with a run club. Maybe try a new pair of shoes that will really help with your running, or some clothing as, you know, the seasons change. So a lot of things you might even be doing already, or you can do very easily. They could check off the book. Including getting all the resources you need to become a better runner. Like, a lot of runners are scared to try out coaching. They think, oh, that's just for elite runners. No, that's for anybody who wants to improve and get better. And just giving it a shot, working with a coach might really make a difference. So there are a lot of different level of things. Not everything has to be a big, scary bucket thing, although those can become really motivating as well, of course.
I like that take a lot. I know for a fact when I put on a new fit from, you know, my Gymshark order or whatever to go to the gym, and I'm a lot more, you know, confident and ready to go. So I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Jeff Horowitz, we have one more segment coming up right after this. So we'll be back with a little bit more here in a second.
Okay, let's have a little fun. Do you use the expensive blue pill to perform better? Are you thinking about it? So what if we can promise you results for less than $1 a pill? Okay, so these same pills can cost you $30 or more at a pharmacy. And our better blue pill works for less than $1 a pill. You'll save $29 or more per pill. And right now, we'll give you 120 blue pills for just $99. Have a little fun and call right now. Get 120 of our better blue pills for just $99. Don't overpay for the other blue pills. Call Steel Man Pills right now and get the better blue pill for less than $1 a pill. Call 1-800-BUY-BLUE, 1-800-BUY-BLUE. It's easy to remember. 1-800-BUY-BLUE. That's 1-800-BUY-BLUE. And thanks for calling.
I am an American veteran. I'm proud to have served this country. Helping veterans is something all Americans can participate in, and it's as simple as donating an old car that you have sitting around. When you call the Veteran Car Donation Program, they'll explain how their program works and then arrange a time they can come and pick up your vehicle for free. Running or not, it doesn't matter. They take cars, trucks, motorcycles, or vans. Show your support by donating your car and get a tax deduction in the process. Call the Veteran Car Donation Program right now. They'll come and pick your car up for free, and you get a tax deduction in the process. Call the number we're about to give you right now. Thank you, and God bless America.
800-887-1097. 800-887-1097. 800-887-1097. That's 800-887-1097.
Do you have diabetes? I'm sure you've seen the television commercials on the new CGM devices from all the top brands and how well they can help you manage your diabetes. Do you have the latest and newest in diabetes technology? The Diabetes Solution Center carries most of the top brands, and the great news is your insurance may cover most of the cost. Call our special CGM hotline today, and our friendly representatives will help see if you qualify. You could get a new CGM from the top brands at little or no cost to you. Make living with diabetes easier. You are just one free phone call away to learn if your insurance covers the cost. So make this free call today to the Diabetes Solution Center and learn for free how to get your new continuous glucose monitor.
800-659-7997. 800-659-7997. 800-659-7997. That's 800-659-7997.
Welcome back to Live Better. I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and you're tuned into the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. We're talking to Jeff Horowitz, a marathon runner, over 200 of them, and ultras on 6 different continents. Now, I want to jump right back into it. I got about 10 minutes here, so I got a lot of questions that I want to fill in here. One thing I want to start with is the Chicago Marathon, the Miami Marathon. I see them all the time. I go to Lifetime, so I see like all the pictures all the time of, you know, sign up. What's so special about these marathons? And I believe you just competed in one, correct?
Well, I've got one coming up actually just in a little over a week, the Marine Corps Marathon here in my hometown of D.C. The first race I ever did, I've come back to it again over the years. This is the 50th anniversary, so it's great to be a part of that. And something about the marathon just really captures, you know, the imagination for so many people. You know, it's one of the oldest historic races. It's rooted back in ancient history. You know, when the Persians were invading Greece and the Athenians fought back, and against all the odds, they defeated them at the Battle of Marathon. And according to myth and legend, the runner Pheidippides ran back to Athens to declare, "We are victorious." So the people who were there still, the women, the children, the old folks, knew they wouldn't be taken to slavery. And then, unfortunately, he collapsed and died. And so that's part of the old, you know, thousands of years old history of the race. And in modern times, the Boston Marathon, you know, over 100 years old, and that's been such a target for so many people, the ultimate bucket list item. And when you go there and you participate in a marathon, especially a big city marathon like New York, like Chicago, they just had this 40,000 or so other people doing the same thing as you're doing, and it's such a test of willpower and fitness and determination. And I'll tell you, Blake, you know, when you cross that finish line, really in any race, but for me at least, in a marathon, there's no other feeling like it. You know, you may not know exactly how things are going to work, or, you know, how are things with your family? Oh, you know, good days and bad. I don't know. How's your marriage? Hopefully good, you know, I don't know. Sometimes we fight. I think we love each other. But when you cross that finish line, you know exactly what you've accomplished. You know what it took to get there, and you know exactly what you've done. And the feeling of satisfaction you get from that, from me and from many other people, there's nothing like it. I respect all races and all distances, but there's something about the marathon. You know, I believe that everyone should try it. And in the book, I list the ones that I think are really the special ones to target on your list.
Yeah, so what, in your opinion, in the book, what are the biggest, or your favorite, rather, you know, ideas for people to, you know, go and try?
Which races do you mean? Is that,
well,
what you're asking?
The ideas, yeah, the ideas, you know. Yeah. What are your, you know, favorites in the book?
Well, there's so many different things. I think, you know, even though I just said how, you know, wonderful the marathon is, I also don't want to be the kind of coach or the kind of, like, you know, running enthusiast says, oh, if you don't run a marathon, you're not really a runner. Because that's certainly not true. And there's so many fun races out there. And I'd love to be competitive and try and run the best I can. But you don't always have to put that kind of pressure on you. And there's so many other fun races out there, like one I'm kind of fascinated with, I got to tell you. Very unlikely, but there's a charity run down in North Carolina, the Krispy Kreme Challenge. You run 3 miles, you eat a dozen donuts, and then you run back. And you don't have to eat a dozen donuts, but that's the challenge. And I just get the biggest kick out of it. It just seems so unlikely and so much fun. There are races where you run in costumes where they blow bubbles off. Of course, there's a zombie run where people, volunteers, will dress up like zombies and chase you on the course. With Halloween coming up, that's a good one. For me, it's a great way to, like, explore the world, right? So whether you want to have fun with neighbors and friends, whether you want to go run somewhere that's beautiful, if it's not a race, you know, some of the great runs I've done, and I talk about them in the book, have nothing to do with racing. It might be just in a beautiful location. Seeing a sunrise, you can do that tomorrow. You know, get up extra early and just see the sun come up, or a beautiful sunset. You know, even in bad weather, I've run in some big rainstorms, and it's just exhilarating. You know, putting down new footsteps, you know, when you're running on fresh snow. But to me, it's just a great way to experience the world and nature and just feel good about myself.
I like that a lot. It kind of seems like it's like the little things that make it the experience. But kind of on the opposite end of little things, you've done ultra marathons over in different continents. Can you tell me a little bit about that and, you know, where the coolest areas you've been are?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I mentioned earlier, like, about how your body will undergo all these changes, these physiological changes, to enable you to run further and further as you continue to train. Once a lot of those changes have been made, it's not that hard to keep going further. So I tell people it's so much harder to go from, like, a 10-kilometer race to a marathon than it is to go from a marathon to an ultra. So an ultra, because your body's already made all those changes, you just have to kind of get used to being out there longer and going further. An ultra is anything over the standard 26.2-mile distance of a marathon, but they fall into usually standard categories, like, you know, a 50-mile run, a 50-kilometer run, a 100-mile run, 24-hour runs. Sometimes they just do them by time. So I've done a bunch of 50-mile runs. And, you know, just getting out there, you know, usually, you know, beautiful places in the woods and, you know, on these trails, a different way of experiencing the world. Some of my favorite runs, I mentioned that Himalayan run earlier. I was lucky enough to run, technically, it's an ultra marathon, the Two Oceans Marathon in South Africa. I also ran the Comrades Ultra Marathon, and those are just wonderful moments. I remember the whole crowd bursting into Shosa Loza, the unofficial South African anthem. As the runners were coming across the finish line, they would spontaneously start singing it, and it just, you know, gave you goosebumps. Running in Egypt past the pyramids, but also, you know, smaller local runs. I ran a little, like, hometown marathon in Idaho one time, Mesa Falls. You cross the finish line, and they give you a coupon. You go down the street to the local drugstore, and they'll give you a milkshake. And I thought that was so great. It felt like just a really nice little hometown race, and just the feeling of that is fun. So I still have plenty more on my list. The big one coming up for me is Tokyo, which is very hard to get into, but I managed to get into for this 2026 edition and on March 1st. So you can root for me when I'm out there. And if you manage to get in yourself, if anyone out there has entered, you know, please get in touch and let me know you're there. And maybe we can connect.
That sounds awesome. Running in Tokyo. Is it at nighttime or during the day?
No, that's the daytime. And that's part of a series they have now. It's kind of like in you know, tennis and golf, the Open Series. They have what's called the World Marathon Majors. And for elites, this is a way to, you know, generate some really good money. And, you know, if they place well across, you know, these six races. But for more, like, average runners like myself, if you complete all six, you're recognized as having completed the World Marathon Major circuit. And you get your special medal and recognition, like so many of the suckers for. And Tokyo is my last one to get that designation. I'm a completer of the World Marathon Major circuit. So that's kind of exciting for me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I definitely couldn't do that, and it would take me quite a while to, you know, even get up to 10 miles. But you mentioned that, you know, going from 10 to 26 is probably harder than, you know, going from 26 to 50. I guess when the miles do get hardest for you, how do you find something positive in the struggle, or how do you guys push past that?
Wow, yes, that's a great question. First of all, I want to mention that you talked earlier, Blake, about how you're, you know, you like to do lifting, a gym guy. I'm a gym rat myself. I actually was into lifting before I got into running, and I still kept up with it, and I do all this. As much as I love running, one of the things I talk about in the book is, you know, to make sure that you're involved in doing other things that will help keep your body strong. Because Because to get better at something, you have to do that thing, right? That specificity of movement. But if you only do that one thing, you leave gaps in your fitness. So I'm always trying to get my runners to do some strength training, to do some core work, maybe some stretching, yoga, Pilates, but just try lots of different ways to use your body and see what you can do with that. But as you build up and you get better and better with this, you know, getting motivated and staying, you know, keeping your head in the game is challenging. One of the things that I like to do is I create certain mantras, right? Just these phrases that you can go to that will help inspire you and keep you on track and keep you going. Dina Castor, the great American Olympian, you know, Olympic champion, said that her mantra was when she ran, when she was in a difficult spot, she would just think, define yourself. Define yourself, you know, and I love that. Who are you? Like, what kind of person are you? The person gives up, or are you going to push through, you know? I know other ones that people have used. Remember why. Maybe you're running in honor of someone, or you're running because you want to be a better you after perhaps maybe you've gotten that's a great report from your doctor and you're committed to doing this thing. And in racing, when I go longer, I remember all those weeks and months I spent preparing for this, and I tell myself, you've done the work. Right, so when I feel tired and I'm having trouble focusing, I just remember all those hours I spent running already, and what a shame it would be if I just threw that all away when my body is ready to do it. Quite often your body's ready, but your brain needs to get on board, right? So you just have to remember to tell yourself you've done the work and you can do this, and then you just keep pushing through.
I like that a lot. I can 100% relate with that with just my meal prep. You know, I'm 90 days in. You know, I want to be done, but I've done the work. Really quick, Jeff, where can they find your book? You got 15 seconds.
You could find it online at Amazon. You could find it in stores like Barnes & Noble. You can go to my publisher, Velo Press, and buy it directly. So it's out there. This book, The Runner's Bucket List, and book I came out last year, is also almost, I think, the companion book, Think Like a Runner, helping you through this whole journey. Think Like a Runner and The Running Bucket List.
I'm holding in my hand the American Silver Eagle Dollar. It's a beautiful piece of American history, and it's 1 ounce of silver. Originally minted in 1986, these coins are a beautiful classic piece of American history, and they're a great investment you should add to your portfolio. The beauty of silver is that however much you have available to invest, silver is affordable and easy to acquire, with one coin costing around $30. So, if you choose to invest a few thousand in silver, you can get quite a bit for your money. And you'll have a tangible asset that you can hold, one you can be proud to own. Claim your piece of American history with American Silver Eagle Dollars. Call the Silver Hotline right now.
800-620-1624. 800-620-1624. 800-620-1624. That's 800-620-1624.
Every champion has a team behind them. And for thousands of families without insurance, Christ Clinic is that team. At Christ Clinic in Katy, Texas, they provide high-quality, faith-based health care to people who can't afford it. Because everyone deserves a shot at health, no matter their income or insurance status. Their doctors, volunteers, their mission, rooted in compassion. Their impact, over 10,000 patient visits every year and growing. But they can't do it without help from fans like you. If you ever cheered for a comeback story, this is your chance to be a part of one. Donate today at ChristClinicKaty.org and help them keep the doors open for those who need it most. One gift can be the difference between surviving and thriving. Christ Clinic in Katy, where health meets hope and faith goes to work. That's Christ Clinic Katy, spelled KATY.org. Team up with them today.
My fellow Americans, let the message ring out that from this day forward, when you buy American, you buy the best. Handcrafted, something premium, something pure. For this is the very essence of what our servicemen and women gave their lives to protect, and by God, we shall not allow their sacrifice to be forgotten. It's time to show the world just how great American can be. And we will not wait for tomorrow to come. We will stand here.
responsibly.
Welcome back to Live Better. I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and you're tuned in to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Our final guest is author Nick Douglas. His new book, Where Did Our Game Go?, dives into the transformation of college football from community passion to corporate spectacle. Let's talk about what's been lost, what's gained, and where it's headed. So, Nick, thank you for joining me today. I'm excited to talk about this.
Absolutely, Blake. I appreciate you having me on.
Of course. So just to start out with this, what motivated you to write Where Did Our Game Go? And was there a moment that kind of made you say, this story needs to be told?
Absolutely, Blake. It happened in the fall of 2023 when I was covering for the University of Washington. I understood the nature of the college football landscape with the Pac-12 coming to an end. That was pretty much understood earlier that summer. And as I covered the team and as they made their run to the national title, I saw how much it meant to a lot of those fans, and I was not a West Coast aficionado by any means, but as we dove into the season and as I covered game by game, every game meant more, and all the time I spent out there, I just saw the passion amongst these fans. And it was fascinating because we all knew this run was coming to a close, and it's very rare in sports history, as you know, where everyone knows that something's coming to an end. And typically a player will retire or a coach will retire and they won't announce it. And then it's all after the fact. But this one was odd because we all knew the Pac-12 was coming to the close. And so as we saw the passion amongst those fans throughout the season, you know, in that off season, we took the time and my team and I looked at the options on writing a book, and we got to work that January.
So I'm curious. I do, now that you say that, I do remember you posting about Washington and their national title run. Were you there since the beginning? I can't remember. Or did you kind of join in once they started, getting those wins?
Yeah, so I got connected with the University of Washington that July, so right on the front end of the season, and I covered on the back end and in the postseason.
Wow, that's – I didn't know you were there from the beginning. That's – I don't know what you'd want to call that, but great chance that the team you were covering end up going to the national championship. So that's really cool to see. So to jump into, the book, what is NIL for the people who don't understand? And, what's kind of going on with that and what brought it into the game?
Yeah, so this was something that was long overdue. I think we can all admit that the dated model of the NCAA just owning players and restricting their name, image, and likeness was no more. And the book really highlights COVID and how COVID really expedited things. And we dive into other historical moments in the game's history on, when the game has shifted drastically. And COVID was one of them. And so now in the current landscape, you can't help but look back at every intricate detail of, and we detail this in the book, of the COVID process and what went on. And who was in charge, and how did they view things, and so on and so forth. And so we go through the history of the game, how did the game get to be the way it was then? How did major events like COVID and several others impact the way the game shifted, and why the game looks the way it does now, and where the game went, and where the game is going from here?
So I guess, what's your opinion on the NIL? Because I know you're an Ole Miss fan, you got Lane Kiffin, funny guy, but from what you explained, Ole Miss is some pretty big, ballers when it comes to, money. What's your opinion on that? And, do you think there should be some kind of, restriction or money cap on that for, to make sure it's even for other schools that don't get the same opportunities as, a big SEC school?
What we're seeing, Blake, is we're seeing a lot of parity across a lot of conferences, and especially in the SEC, you've got about 9 teams that can compete for the title. So there seems to be an evening of the playing field because teams can't just stack talent anymore because players won't hang around programs where they won't play. Having said that, I do think the restrictions are bound to come down, specifically around the portal. You're already seeing the elimination of one portal window, which is a right move. That's something that's long overdue and that needed to be done a while ago. And so I'm glad that that's taking place this offseason. But the revenue share model, and schools will have the opportunity to disperse more funds and not just reach into donor dollars or pay for play. I think you're going to see innovative ways on this, and I'm intrigued about how it gets enforced and how you ensure that you do have somewhat of a level playing field.
Well, I'm curious what your opinion on, you know, regulating players then, or how that works, because so I don't know if you know Caden Proctor.
Yes.
Okay, so I went to high school in Iowa. Caden Proctor played for our rival school, so you know I kind of like know some things. But right, he went from Alabama, then went to Iowa for like a month, got a Jeep, $100,000, whatever it was, and then after he got it, he transferred back to Alabama, right? So how do you go about, like, how would these like schools go about managing these things and make sure stuff like that does not happen?
Well, that's why, once again, the spring window being eliminated will eliminate a lot of that. And you know, the SEC already had a rule that in the spring window you couldn't transfer to another SEC program. So if you transferred from Minnesota to Alabama and then you tried to go to Tennessee, well, you just learned the Alabama playbook. So that rule is already in effect. Now that that window is eliminated, you won't see situations like Nico Yamalieva at Tennessee going to UCLA really late in the game. You won't see situations where, like the Caden Proctor situation, where he went to one school, Iowa, for a couple of months, took his check, got his car, and then went back to where he was. That will be eliminated, and I'm excited for that. And I think that more regulation is going to continue to come around this. I'm intrigued to see how it manifests itself.
So what's your opinion then, and I guess what does the book mention about identity, community, or ethics kind of being lost as the game has been commercialized? Because, like, for example, really quick, you don't really see, maybe I'm just not looking as well, but you don't really see, you know, hometown players going and playing for their favorite school anymore. You know, they go where, you know, they're going to make the most money now.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, that's the evolution of the game, for better or for worse. You know, you've got kids that are able to leave their hometowns. You know, these 2A, 3A players in poor states and poor towns are able to leave and go play at a marquee university and make some serious bucks for it. So whether that's an element of the game we're losing or an element of the game that is being augmented and improved upon is in the eyes of the beholder. But ultimately, I think it comes down to how the game was bound to evolve. And as our world and society gets more and more interconnected, and as more opportunities begin to open up for athletes to explore, this was bound to take place. And, you know, there is some piece of local identity that we might be losing, but with that, there are all kinds of new waves of activity that are taking place that I believe are very positive.
Is there anything in the book or of your knowledge that's in there that not a lot of people have, you know, surface level knowledge to, where you can't just look up? Because I'm assuming, you know, I see you in the sports world a lot. You've had to talk to some people that maybe gave you insider information or, you know, things that the public hasn't really heard of.
Definitely. We did a lot of primary source research and a lot of interviews with people who, frankly, the folks that know where the bodies are buried, and everybody wished to remain anonymous, and so we made sure of that and made sure to respect that. But we wanted to make sure everything was factually correct. We wanted to make sure everything was backed by legitimate sources. And, you know, there were a lot of speculations and a lot of opinions that jaded a lot of the views on, you know, what was going on. And so we wanted to make sure through several rounds of trips to the West Coast and cross-validation, we ensured that we had something that was factually correct, something that was not opinionated, not too opinionated, but much more focused on relaying the set of events and diving into why things happened the way that they did. And thankfully, we were able to keep it pretty concise. It's only 130 pages. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a quick read. So I guess to go back to, are you able to, is there anything that you know that we don't know that you're able to share?
I think pretty much everything that needs to be shared is shared in the book. So you'll have to order a copy and see for yourself.
I will. I'll have to take Tucker's copy. So
yeah, I owe you both a signature on that.
Yeah, I know. I need my signature. So, 10 years down the road when Nick Douglas has 10 other books that are, you know, New York Times, you know, I can say I was there from the start.
Yeah, I don't know if all those will hit bestseller, but, you know, we can only, this one did, thankfully.
Hey, you know what? With where you're going, bro, I don't doubt it. So you got Texas Tech, you got big names like Alabama, but let's just say Texas Tech, right? I kind of asked this a little bit, but maybe you have, you know, a different answer for this. The Big 12, right? You know, you got Iowa State, you know, I guess people in the Power Four conferences, you look at the Big 12 and you're like, okay, you know, that's the bottom of the barrel conference. I would say most people think that. How do these schools, and if there is any way, compete with like a Texas Tech or, you know, once Oklahoma State gets their grounding again? They have a lot of funding, but Texas Tech has that oil money. Is there anything you can do about it?
As far as regulation goes, that's something that the NCAA is tasked with. And you're seeing now Texas Tech, they spent probably more money than anybody in the country this year, and it's manifest in a very positive way. They're just dominating the competition. We'll see how that holds up in postseason play. They surely look like they're on the way to qualify for it. And so it'll be very interesting to see how those teams do. But, yeah, I mean, the Big 12 is in a weird spot. They're not viewed as a premier conference. And, you know, a school like Texas Tech, I believe, is an anomaly. I don't think the conference top to bottom will ever have the financial means to compete like Texas Tech does. They will continue to spend and spend and spend. And so Joey McGuire's got an awesome setup there. And, you know, maybe they'll leave the conference. Maybe they'll look to move to greener pastures. But they're a case study to watch because they have all the resources in the world, and they've made it clear. In fact, some would argue they've been a bit obnoxious about going and making sure everybody knows that they're going to go pay double for whatever top player to go bring them in.
Yeah, that's a scary thought, you know, especially being an Iowa State fan. But you know, hopefully we'll recover and see them, you know, in Fort Worth. We got about 2 minutes here. If you could reshape college football for the next decade, what would it look like to you?
I think the main change would take place around the transfer portal. We would go back to a one-time transfer, and anything more than that would be on an exception basis, you know, a coach being fired, or something case by case. I think that's where a lot of the game gets lost, and you have no loyalty and no continuity. That's where it would start. And then from there, we would begin to understand exactly how paper would work. We'd probably look for a commission, look for a collective bargaining agreement, and, you know, go from there. I think those two changes would be enough in the initial wave to see whether or not these were sustainable for the long term.
Yeah, 100%. We got about a minute. I want to ask you this. You are a young author. You know, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're going to write a few more books here. What type of determination does it take to write a book at such a young age?
It takes a lot. It takes an unhealthy level of obsession, that's for sure. I'll tell you this. I reached several points where I not only scrapped and restarted, but I wasn't sure if we were going to finish the project because it got to be so much. But what was fascinating about it is you really find a subject you're passionate about and that you can do tens and hundreds and probably thousands of hours of work on. And just for this, it was getting to the bottom of the situation. Just diving into that was so fascinating to me because there were so many different constituents. And, you know, if I feel compelled to tell another story, I know God will show that to me, and we'll go attack it with the same rigor and aggression that we did this one.
Heck yeah, man. I remember you talking about it at that Brazilian steakhouse, so I'm glad it got carried out. And really quick, 10 seconds, where can they find this book?
They can find it on Amazon.com or at WhereDidOurGameGo.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on here, Nick. I'm glad you could share your story. And we'll be right back with a little bit more here on Live Better.
We'll be right back. This is a true sad story for ADT, the leader in home security systems. My favorite dog, Oliver, was stolen from our garage recently. If I had a camera system installed in my home from ADT, I would have known exactly what car possibly pulled up in my driveway and stole my little friend. If I had a security system from ADT, my dog would still be here. I called ADT this weekend, and they're coming out in a few days to install a camera and a new security system. Unfortunately, it's a little too late for me. Listen, protect everyone you love in your family. Call ADT now. Have them come out and give you a quote to install a full security system in your home. Don't let it be too late for you. Call right now.
Paid for by the Home Security Hotline. 800-361-3491. 800-361-3491. 800-361-3491. That's 800-361-3491.
Hello, Americans. It's Uncle Sam here. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes to the IRS or state, don't worry. I've got important news that may help you negotiate a lower tax bill. In today's economy, the IRS has released a variety of new rules and is offering more flexible terms to help Americans looking to settle their IRS debt. If you apply today, we may be able to lift your wage garnishments and release a freeze on your bank assets or business. Our team of tax professionals can resolve your case and stop collection actions against you. Even if you've been audited or haven't filed a return in years, they can help. Call right now and find out if you qualify to settle your IRS debt for far less than what you owe. Pick up your phone right now and call us for a free $500 IRS tax review. Don't wait. Here's the number.
Call right now. 800-943-9215. 800-943-9215. 800-943-9215. Again, for the last time, that's 800-943-9215.
You hear that? That's the sound of uncertainty lurking under your hood. You know the feeling. I know I do. That sudden sinking sensation when you see a check engine light or your car unexpectedly breaks down and you're faced with sky-high repair bills. It's time to shield against unexpected repairs with CarShield. CarShield is America's most trusted auto protection company and has an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. Don't let the fear of a breakdown keep you up at night. Trust the Shield, CarShield, and say goodbye to terrifying repair bills and hello to peace of mind. Your plan also comes with 24/7 roadside assistance, courtesy towing, rental car options, and so much more. Don't wait till it's too late. Call CarShield now before a breakdown. Protect your wallet. Protect your car with CarShield. Get our best protection ever. Call now. You'll thank me later.
800-247-6135. 800-247-6135. That's 800-247-6135.
That's going to be a wrap on today's episode of Live Better on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Now, we had two really different conversations today, but both with the same message at their core, whether it's running across continents like Jeff Horowitz or questioning how we evolved as a culture like Nick Douglas. Both of these in football, both of these guests reminded us of something simple. It's easy to lose the heart in the things we do every day. Sometimes we start with passion, or that's training for a marathon, building a business, chasing a dream. And along the way, it turns into routine. It becomes about numbers, performance, and checking boxes. I think what today's show really drove home is that growth and success mean nothing if we lose the why behind it. Jeff talked about finding joy again in movement, turning running into adventure instead of a grind. Nick reminded us what happens when we forget the soul of the game. And honestly, the soul of anything that we do that we find purpose and pleasure in. When something is built on pride and purpose, a lot of that can get lost in the noise of, you know, profit and pressure, especially in the football world. Both of these ideas hit in different ways, but they come back to the same truth. Whether you're chasing right now, don't forget what got you started. Keep it fun, keep it meaningful, and don't let the spark fade. Because living better isn't about the physical. It's about mental, emotional, and spiritual. It's about balance. It's about being intentional with your time and energy and making sure the things that fill your days are the things that actually make you feel alive. So I'm your host, Blake Byrne, reminding you to stay curious, stay consistent, and as always, keep choosing to live better. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you guys next time, next week.